So one day, Jim, this is the owner of the company. You know, he's swearing up a blue streak, saying that, you know, driver didn't show up again. You know, and I said, well, I could drive that.
That's Diana Kilmurray, the bold and fearless truck driver who took on both sexist attitudes on the job and a corrupt union. As part of Women's History Month, we'll hear her story today, brought to us by On the Line, the Canadian labor history storytelling podcast produced by the volunteers and staff of the BC Labor Heritage Center and hosted by labor reporter and author Rod Mickelberg. And on Labor History in Two.
The year was 1911. That was the day Big Bill Haywood of the Industrial Workers of the World gave his speech on the general strike.
I'm Chris Garlock, and this is Labor History Today.
Welcome to another edition of On the Line, the podcast that brings to light stories from British Columbia's rich labor heritage. I'm your host, Rod Mickleborough. In this episode of On the Line, we present the compelling tale of Diana Kilmurray, a bold and fearless BC truck driver who became immersed in the murky, male-dominated world of the Teamsters Union, back in the days when women behind the wheel of big trucks were as scarce as generous employers. She took on both sexist attitudes on the job and a union that was then, in the United States, riddled by corruption, with a top-down leadership that was closely connected to organized crime and crushed any challenge to the way the union was run. Yet, against all odds, Kilmurray eventually found herself in the highest echelons of North America's largest union. This is her story, much of it in her own words. Born in Montreal, Diana Kilmurray came to Vancouver in 1954 when her father, a doctor and research scientist, accepted a position at UBC. She grew up on the university endowment lands. But the stuffy world of academia was not in the cards for the rebellious young Diana. She dropped out of school at 16 to get married. By the time she was 19, she was divorced, with two kids looking for work. I interviewed Diana Kilmurray for the Labor Heritage Center's Oral History Project last April, and I asked her how she wound up driving a truck.
Well, I was going to Langara College trying to pick up on my education and happened to be going out with this guy whose father owned a trucking company. So I used to go with him running around in his dump truck. So one day, Jim, this is the owner of the company, you know, he's swearing up a blue streak, saying that, you know, driver didn't show up again, you know. And I said, well, I could drive that. And, you know, this is back in, like, the early 70s, 71 or 72 or some such. So, you know, I took the truck out for a boot and ran up to the dump and, you know, did what was necessary there. I mean, you know, it wasn't very long before the single axle guy didn't show up, so I ended up with his truck. And then a little while later, the tandem guy didn't show up, and meanwhile, Trevor, the guy I was going out with, was not impressed. He didn't want to, you know, date a female truck driver. And I said, that's fine. I'll take the truck. See you later. I was actually going to buy my own truck. And but the contract I was after came with some bulldozing and the like. So I put my name in for the heavy equipment operators course, and I became the first woman in BC to take that course. And then on the day that we graduated, United Contractors, that was building the Upper Levels Highway, said they would take any or all of the graduating class. I got off the ferry at Horseshoe Bay and stopped at the United Contractors shack there. And I said, you know, and I had my newly minted heavy equipment operator certificate, and I already had my air ticket and class two license, and, you know, had gotten my class one over there in the course. And he says, my God, you're abroad. And I said, yes, well, I'm aware. And he says, well, honey, if you think you can drive that. And I look over, and it's the biggest truck I've ever seen. You know, an off-road, they're called cat wagons. I mean, you got to go up a staircase to get in the thing. So in for a penny, in for a pound, you know. So I get in this freaking thing, and looking around, no clutch. I mean, I'd never heard of a truck without a clutch. So, but, you know, there's a gear shift, and it says R and D123. And so I put it in gear, go get a load of rock out of the screening machine, go up the fill, and like in a standard dump truck, you have these levers you pull and a tailgate. Of course, in the cat wagon, there is no tailgate. And I'm looking around, I wonder what puts this thing up, and there's this really big lever down there, and I thought, well, it's either an ejection sheet or, you know. So I pulled that up, and there's, you know, and this load of rock, you know, thunders off, and of course, kind of relieved that I had figured out what made it go, I go like this. Well, of course, you know, I just broke my neck on the roof, you know.
So it was an ejection seat.
Almost, you know. So anyways, I come back down, and he says, well, I'll be goddamned. And he says, well, get your ass down to the Teamster Hall, and if they'll take you, I'll take you. So I go down to 490 East Broadway, the Teamsters Hall, and, you know, really, there's this guy from Central Casting, you know, behind the little wicket. And he says, yeah, what do you want? And I'm going, well, I was just at United, you know, just, you know, I'm nervous. And this guy has got a stogie stuck in the corner of his mouth and looks like he's 8,000 years old, you know. And I've got my hair up in my little ponytails and, you know, you can't imagine. So I tell him that, you know, United has hired me on. Slam goes the window. We'll see about that. And then, you know, these enormous business agents come in, and there's great consultations and, you know, consternation. But they had screwed up, because under the contract they have 72 hours to supply. And for whatever reason, you know, they hadn't supplied. So, you know, United could hire off the bank, as they call it, you know.
Non-union.
No, they're a union contractor.
But, I mean, they could hire whoever they wanted.
Yes, yes. Anybody off the street, you know, because gotcha. There's a dispatch system. And that's how I became a Teamster.
You see me on the highway, and you nearly shift your load. Take another look, good buddy, before you nearly leave the road. You've never seen a truck driving woman. 90 pounds of fire in a 5-foot frame. You better move on over.
As a single parent, the increased pay and benefits that resulted from her membership in Teamsters Local 213 were a godsend.
At that time I was making $2.50 an hour as a non-union tandem dump truck driver. And the day I became a Teamster, I was making $5.40 and double on double time and, you know, pensions and health and welfare plans. I mean, I thought I had arrived in heaven.
After completing work on the Upper Levels Highway, Kilmurry was dispatched to the Site 1 hydroelectric project near Hudson Hope in northeastern BC, the only woman among a huge workforce of men.
So you ended up north, 2,500 guys.
And me.
What was it like?
Well, you know the scenes in you know, Western movies, you know, the guy comes into the saloon and the whole place goes quiet. So, you know, it first shift, you know, there's about 1,500 people on day shift. So anyways, I don't trip over your feet, you know, they're just people, a lot of people, all guys, but you can do that.
So were you intimidated or nervous or?
No, well, you know, I'll tell you what happens. As long as you do your work and you're competent, you know, like you're not trying to get special privileges or be treated different. I mean, my dispatch up there was the water truck. So there's like 40 huge belly dumps, which are, you know, semi-trailer things, to, you know. And these other godforsaken things called that hauled the concrete buckets. They're like a converted scrapers. But anyways, on the haul roads, every time a truck goes by, you know, of course, there's dust everywhere to the point where you can't see. So my job was to, you know, keep the haul roads wet. But where I would fill up was this gigantic pipe. And it had a little tiny wrench affair on it as a valve to open and close it. So, you know, I go to the mechanic shop and I said, I need a pipe about yay big. And what do you need that for? And I said, well, because I'm not going to break my wrist and my back pulling this freaking rusted valve on the water fill. So I will bring it down for you. And of course, they found a pink rag and put a bow on it for me. You know, we got on. At coffee break, like all the trades have a shack, you know, where you can pull in and have coffee. So I go in there. I was staying out of there because I like to read. So, you know, a coffee break, you know, turn off the frigging motor for 10 minutes and I'd be reading. So, you know, one of the guys comes over and said, yeah, Kilmurry, you too good to sit with us? And I said, well, no, I want to invade your space, actually. Sure, I'll come have a coffee. I don't actually drink coffee, but I'll come and spend coffee with you. So I go in there, and obviously they had it all planned, because, you know, we're not talking Playboy
pinups.
Posters. Pinups, yes, thank you. You know, we're talking deeply disgusting penthouse stuff, you know, and so I don't say anything. Just, you know, coffee is over. But, you know, then I sneak in there, you know, on Graveyard and got some pictures from Playgirl and put them up there. Next day, no posters of either kind. You know, it's a matter of how you handle it. Like, you can't go to, you know, to Rome and insist that they start speaking Spanish, you know? When in Rome, do as the Romans do, but, you know, you got to defend your 2 square feet.
After time in a bunkhouse, Kilmurry bought a 3-bedroom trailer that she shared with a friend and her youngest son. She was accepted by her co-workers and began to be active in the Teamsters Union. The more she learned about its inner workings, however, the more she felt something wasn't quite right. A spark of activism was lit that led her to question the Teamsters' well-worn status quo. And that meant taking on Senator Ed Lawson, the top teamster in Canada, who had dominated the union for years.
After they saw that I could drive, after they saw that I was a good teamster, I mean, I ended up being the assistant steward up there because I could spell and construct a proper paragraph, you know.
And is that when you started to think there might be something wrong in the union? Was it up there, or was that?
Well, yes. See, the heavy at the time, Local 213 was the 12th largest local in the whole of the Teamsters Union, which at the time had about 750 locals. So I think in our heyday we had 11 or 12,000 members, whatever. It was a big local. But the heavy construction, road building, and pipeliners, you know, were the cream of the crop. And there was this really good business agent named Jack Vlahovic. And he decides to take on the principal officer, a guy named Al Medley. So anyways, Vlahovic, this is 1976 now. So Vlahovic wins, you know, runs and wins. And then Lawson, the great Senator Ed Lawson. Well, at the time, Lawson was a trustee of Local 213, president of Joint Council 36. He was the director of the Canadian Conference of Teamster, the 8th vice president in the international, and a Canadian senator, you know, insofar that that means anything. So he took exception that his boy Medley had been usurped by Vlahovic. So, you know, they drum up a bunch of phony charges. And they remove Vlahovic from office. Well, you know, by this time I'm heavily into the union, and you know, we just went crazy. We picketed the hall. We were going to shut down every construction site in BC, and you know, people were punching each other out, and you know, and so. Vlahovic goes to Washington, D.C., which is where the IBT headquarters are, the Teamster headquarters. And he comes back and he says, wow, I ran into these guys. You know, they're with something called Teamsters for a Democratic Union. He said, the most amazing people I've ever seen. So pretty soon, you know, we're all members of TDU. You know, we had one of the biggest chapters of TDU at the time because all the construction drivers that were supporting Vlahovic, you know, joined TDU.
As this was going on, Kilmurry and her son were seriously injured in an accident while driving from Hudson Hope to Vancouver. Her son never fully recovered, and she was unable to work for the next 3 years. During this time, she became increasingly active in a reform group called Teamsters for a Democratic Union, the TDU. She's convinced this activism against the established leadership led to her disability claim being denied. But she didn't let that financial blow dampen her fight for change. That landed her and other TDU members from Vancouver in the middle of the union's massive international convention in 1981, held, no surprise, in Las Vegas.
You campaigned, Vlahovic never did get his job back, did he?
No.
Okay. But you campaigned to be delegates to the 1981 International Convention in Las Vegas.
But because they had removed Vlahovic, we actually got to have an election, and we won all the spots that we could compete for.
The Teamsters for a Democratic Union won all the
Yeah,
spots.
The BC and Yukon chapter. So it was me, Vlahovic, George Fennell, and, you know, a whole bunch of others. So anyway, TDU has decided that they're going to have a protest candidacy. So Jack Vlahovic from Local 213 is going to run for General Secretary Treasurer, and a guy out of Hoffa's Local 299 in Detroit, Pete Camerata, is going to run for president. So off we go into the lion's den. We show up at the door. You got to get your credentials and the like. So Vlahovic said, "Hey, Kilmurry, you go first. They won't hit a woman." I said, "Thanks a bunch." So anyways, I go to the usual doors, and I'm looking right at this guy's belt buckle. I mean, he's like 7 feet tall. I mean, I said, "I'm Diana Kilmurry, duly elected delegate from Local 213. My fellow delegates, Jack Vlahovic, introduce them." I said, "Would you mind stepping aside? We'd want to register, get our credentials." And he says, "Wow, sir, little lady, and he moves just enough, I'm sucking in my gut, another body part's trying to get by this freaking monstrosity of a human being. It just... unbelievable.
Well, you got your credentials.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like I said, they're not going to whack you in front of God and everybody.
As the convention went on, with huge catcalls from the several thousand delegates every time a TDU member tried to speak, instead of being intimidated, Kilmurry got angry. It all came to a head over debate on a TDU resolution to establish an ethical practices committee.
I had about had it up to here with mob and whatever, so I'd worked for 6 months getting the language just right for the an ethical practices committee. You wouldn't think you'd even have to have such a thing, in a union. They just went absolutely banana. And I lost my temper. And, as I want to do, all of it came together, the removing Vlahovic, denying me my long-term disability, all this stuff that had gone on. And by this time, the whole history of the Teamsters and every member that was blacklisted, beat up, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm standing on the floor of the lion's den. So I let them have it.
She made a speech that rocked the convention. Surrounded as she was by all those jeering Teamsters, it also electrified the media. I was at that convention, and it still gives me chills. The highlight of her speech and Ed Lawson's harsh response was captured on video. It featured prominently on American newscasts.
Diana Kilmurry is a Teamster, a heavy equipment driver from Vancouver, British Columbia, and she is also a very active member of Teamsters for a Democratic Union, or TDU, the most visible of the dissident movements at the convention.
I didn't indict y'all. I didn't say you're all a bunch of crooks. I don't think that. But what I do think is that we've had a few rotten apples before, and if you're too damn scared to have an ethical practices committee that you yourselves, the General Executive Board, will control, then, my God, you must be up to something.
I would like to see an ethical practices committee that would prevent the TDU and their magazine convoy from printing all the lies and distortions about the officers and members.
That was your moment, wasn't it?
Yes, but it just, by happenstance, just me losing my temper,
You hadn't planned that.
Oh, no. No, I had a very, respectful stage speech, highlighting, how beneficial it would be, an ethical practices committee, and how it would improve our reputation and help with organizing and blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening to these organized, mobbed up twits up there on the podium.
I mean, you became famous.
I did. It sort of. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that I was young and female and a truck driver. And
did that change your life?
Yes, although I was heavy, heavy, heavy into TDU. By this time, I'm a co-chair of TDU. So, you know, I'm spending more and more time, you know, in the United States. I've always been kind of TDU's lead cheerleader.
Because you're good at it.
Well, because I believe, you see. I mean, you know, and people can tell the difference between, you know, the people that are just mouthing the phrase and what you really believe. And then, you know, of course, hey, this is the broad that told them off in Las Vegas.
Did it go to your head at all? Did you get a little pleased with yourself that all this attention was being paid to you?
Well, yeah, except, you know, I keep my head well shrunk because, you know, there's so many people that have fought the fight in, you know, just terrible places and, you know, that have been beaten up and blacklisted and whatever.
By this time, the story of the fiery female truck driver taking on all that was wrong in the Teamsters Union had attracted movie makers. A made-for-TV movie resulted called Mother Trucker, the Diana Kilmurry story, directed by well-known Canadian filmmaker Sturla Gunnarsson, and starring Barbara Williams as Kilmurry. It's pretty good. You can find it online under a different title, Justice on Wheels, the Diana Kilmurry story.
The top officials in this union have done time for bribery, stealing from the pension fund, murder. They don't care about you. They don't care about a cannery worker who makes $4 an hour. They don't care about Sister Kilmurry back there who's still waiting for a disability check. Should have been in her mailbox months ago. But there's good news. Those warehouse workers and those truck drivers are going to run those fat cats and the mob right out of this union. They don't have to listen to one voice, but they have to listen to a movement. They have to listen to the TDU, the Teamsters for a Democratic Union. We got members in over 100 locals, some of the deadliest. Men and women that'll stand up for what they believe in. And the brains to do it in organized fashion. And we want you to become part of this movement. We want to start a chapter right here in Vancouver. In fact, you guys can do what no other local can do, in the U.S. especially. You can elect the delegate that you're going to send to the Las Vegas convention in June. Elect them. What a novelty. Join with us and be a voice that's heard from coast to coast by 2 million Teamsters. We can run these bastards out, and you guys can be the ones to do it. Thank you very much.
15 minutes later, I'm the financial secretary of BC Yukon chapter of TDU.
But back to real-life events and the dramatic rise of the Teamsters for a Democratic Union. In 1989, the U.S. Department of Justice brought racketeering charges against the leadership of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. This opened the door for the TDU. Kilmurry worked closely with organization co-founder Ken Paff, but they didn't always agree. They differed on the question of whether the union should be taken over by trustees or whether the membership should be given a voice by actually voting for a new leadership.
You know, the biggest fight that we ever had in TDU, you know, because, of course, all of us are strong-willed people, and so me and Ken Paff are going at it. I said, we can reach into this bag of shit and get the right, excuse my language, come out with the right to vote. And Paff is going, no, we're
right
going
to vote was important because always you had the presidents and everybody elected at convention and they controlled the delegates. So this would be one member, one vote. So the elections would be thrown open to the whole membership.
Right. And since 1976, for 12 years, you know, TDU had a Bill of Rights, and on it was the direct election of the top officers and convention delegates. So Paff is really, and Paff is a strategic genius. I mean, that guy is so smart. It's amazing.
All right, I'm going to advance a bit here. So you actually then, in this tremendous decision, you got the right to membership vote. And you, therefore, every member had a right to vote for president. And the TDU decided to run a candidate for president, right?
Yes, but the story of how we got the right to vote, like you said, the Giuliani is saying that they're going to trustee the union. Well, no, you're not. I mean, who's going to negotiate the National Master Freight Agreement, for one, you know? Government mostly can't run a popsicle stand. It certainly can't run an international union with 1.5 million members in Canada, the United States, and Puerto Rico. You know, no. But I said, we can get in this thing and set as the remedy, the solution to this mob influence, is give the members the right to vote and we'll vote them out. We don't meet with Giuliani, but we do meet with Randy Mastro and this whole herd of, you know, DOJ prosecutors and whatever. And they don't get it. Well, we don't understand why you're unhappy. I said, because it's a union. There's 750 locals. There's, you know, Canada, the United States. Do you think I, as a Canadian, would be happy with the Department of Justice of a foreign freaking country running my union? I don't think so. If you want to get rid of the mob, give us the right to vote and we'll vote these people out of office. And we won. We won. I'd died that day, and then I thought, oh my God, what have we done? You know, we're up against the mob, millionaire people with private planes, you know, millions and millions of dollars, and there's this ragtag band of activists, and enter Ron Kerry. So I end up being the first person that Ron Kerry picks to run with him on his slate. And I say to Ken Paff, are you sure you know what I'm like? You know, I'm sorry, I just can't help it. You know, I can only take so much BS and then, you know, you're going to hear what I think. Me and Kerry meet and, you know, I explain to him that I'm a bit of a wild child, so, you know, think about this. He says, nah, ever since 1981, I knew you were the right one. So now we have 2 years to, you know, go to 750 locals, 8 billion loading docks, you know, everything from San Diego's zookeepers to Mickey Mouse's a teepster, you know, all the truckers. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know.
And you went on the road.
Oh, I did, yes. But one of the motorhomes off the movies, and there was this fantastic sign place, and they had these reflective decals, and, you know, so said Teamsters for a Democratic Union, and you know, big Teamster logo on it, you know, on a Canadian flag. And, yeah, drove that from hither to yon and yon to hither.
But you won. Ron Kerry became the president, general president of the Teamsters. And Diana Kilmurry, Local 213, Vancouver, BC, was elected first vice president.
Yes, I got the highest amount of votes next to Kerry.
What was that like? You remember that night when you found out?
Absolutely amazing. But I have to tell you the story. So, you know, it's a supervised election. So, of course, the DOJ and, you know, has got this I guess it's an office building somewhere by DuPont Circle, if you know anything about D.C. But anyway, it's not, and there's more ballots than you can imagine exist in the world. And, you know, so, of course, we think we've got this local and that local, but, you know, we're not sure. It's hard to say. People tell you they'll vote for you, but do they bother, you know? So about halfway through the first day of the count, we're not only winning all the locals we thought we were winning, we're winning quite a few other ones too. And the old guard is just going batshit. You know, they just, you know, they can't believe that it's happening. They can't believe that, you know, this little band of TDU dissidents has knocked them off, you know. But my favorite story. So anyways, we get sworn in. And, you know, that is the most nervous I've ever been, because we got sworn in on the steps of the Marble Palace. That's what they call Teamster headquarters. But anyway, so now we're busy, you know, we're now employees of the IBT, so we're filling out all the paperwork and whatever. So I'm sitting in a little alcove, and it's a little more complicated with me because I'm Canadian. And they thought maybe they would pay me in Canadian funds. I said, no, 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 no. You know, said 75 grand in the Constitution, and that'll be in U.S. funds. You know, we're not going to pay the one female, you know, like 20 grand left. So anyways, I'm filling out all this paper. And here comes Lawson. And I forget who all was with him, but, you know, the defeated in their, you know, I guess getting their millions of dollars of pensions and whatever. And he says, you know, we should have never fucked over Kilmurry. And I wanted to leap out and said, yeah, fake, game, set, match.
And were you ever tempted to give up?
You know, in a group like TDU, you know, the worst parts was after the conventions. And you think, oh, God, it's five more years of these assholes. But, you know, you get little victories along the way. I don't know. There was never a good time to quit. It needed to be done, and we were the people that were going to get it done. So, you know, I think it must be like the Ukraine army.
You know, so you defeat, the TDU overthrew the biggest, the baddest, the most corrupt, the largest, the most powerful union leadership in North America. Mm. I mean, and the headquarters for a lot of that was right here in Local 213 in Vancouver. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Well, again, because we could, because of the delegate thing, and because, you know, the heavy construction people were the force in 213. And I mean, you know, it's not like you'd spend your life in, you know, J.B. Honkin Company, you know, making widgets or something. I mean, we were boomers. Beyond the pipeline on one job, you know, building a dam on another one, paving the roads, or, you know.
But Local 213 in Vancouver played a role.
Oh, yes.
And overthrowing,
yes,
this huge corrupt organization that was notorious.
Because of Lawson and his power, because of the size of the local, because the Local 213 folks were hard-ass boys, let me tell you. You know, it's when men were men, I got to say. You know, the whole of the building trades is like that.
And one hard-ass woman.
And one hard-ass woman, yeah.
Kilmurry tells great stories about what it was like helping to direct policy during her 5 years in the union's lavish Washington headquarters after all those years of scuffling at the bottom. But they are not part of this podcast. You can find the entire interview on the BC Labour Heritage Centre's website under Oral History. The TDU's inspiring victory was not the end of the story. Although Ron Carey was re-elected narrowly in 1996 as president, he fell afoul of a dubious irregularity that led to his downfall, and Kilmurry was defeated in a subsequent runoff election in 1998. For the next 20 years or so, the union was led by Jimmy Hoffa Jr., son of his disappeared father, the legendary Jimmy Hoffa. But the union remained light years from the corrupt, mafia-tainted leadership of the past. And that's due, in no small measure, to the small band of TDU reformers and a tough, truck-driving woman from Vancouver named Diana Kilmurry. It's one of my favorite labor stories. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of On the Line. Thanks to the other members of the podcast collective, Patricia Weir, Donna Sakuda, and John Mabbitt, for their work putting this together. There would be no On the Line without them. The song, Truck Driving Woman, was written by the great Cy Conn and performed by the Vancouver group Aya. I'm your non-truck driving host, Rod Mickleborough. We'll see you next time on the line.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1911. That was the day Big Bill Haywood of the Industrial Workers of the World gave his speech on the general strike. He presented it in New York City at a fundraiser for the Bucafori Defense Fund. Vincent Bucafori was a shop representative for his union. He faced repeated harassment and discharge by his foreman for executing his union duties. Finally, as witnesses described, the foreman fired Bucafori and punched him, drawing blood. Then he came at Bucafori with a heavy object. Bucafori shot and killed him in self-defense. He was charged with manslaughter, convicted, and sentenced to 10 years at Sing Sing Prison. The IWW raised money for his defense and fought for his acquittal and release. Haywood arrived at the fundraiser to deliver the keynote speech titled The General Strike. In it, he reviewed the rich history of workers' actions since the days of the Paris Commune in 1871. He also raged against electoral reform. He stated, quote, "The broadest interpretation of political power comes through the industrial organization. It gives the vote to women. It re-enfranchises the black man and places the ballot in the hands of every boy and girl employed in a shop. Makes them eligible to take part in the general strike. Makes them eligible to legislate for themselves where they are most interested in changing conditions, namely in the place where they work." He continued, quote, "You have all the industries in your hands at the present time. There is justification for political action, and that is to control the forces of the capitalists that they use against us. That is the reason that you should fully understand the power of the ballot."
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us at Labor History in Two.
Hey, that's it for this week's edition of Labor History Today. You can subscribe to LHT on your favorite podcast app. Even better, if you like what you hear, sure hope you do, like it in your podcast app, pass it along, leave a review. That really helps folks to find the show. Labor History in Two is a partnership between the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show, a labor-themed radio show out of Pennsylvania. Special thanks this week to On the Line Stories of BC Workers, the Canadian labor history storytelling podcast produced by volunteers and staff of the BC Labor Heritage Center, hosted by labor reporter and author Rod Mickleborough. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Labor History Today is produced by the Labor Heritage Foundation and the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. You can keep up with all the latest labor arts news. Subscribe to the Labor Heritage Foundation's free weekly newsletter at laborheritage.org. By the way, if you're at the Labor Notes Conference next month in Chicago, be sure to look for me at the Labor Radio Podcast Network table. The Labor Heritage Today team includes Ben Blake, Patrick Dixon, Leon Fink, Sherry Lincoln, Joe McCartan, Evan Papp, Jessica Pozak, and Alan Weirdak. For Labor History Today, this has been Chris Garlock. Thanks for listening. Keep making history, and see you next time.